A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello, Herman and Corn. We did an episode about losing one's phone, and it was remiss of us to wait this long after doing so many episodes about ADHD to talk about one of those things that happens to ADHDers, which is losing their possessions. But we got around to it, and we talked about the different ways in which you can set up your Android to potentially survive phone loss in terms of giving yourself options for remote erasure of data, or even a little opening to a good Samaritan to return your device through. But let's talk about the next potential thing you might lose and the role of technology in helping with it, which is the less catastrophic or more catastrophic, depending on what you've got sitting in it, which could be your wallet. I'd actually say wallets are potentially the worst because you've got so many things that are tedious to replace. So we get from talking about tracking your Android through to those loss prevention things. Gizmos like the Tile, or the one I have, which is the Pebblebee. I went out of my way to purchase a couple of Pebblebee units. After buying Tile for the first time, I concluded that for someone of my disposition, who loses things around the house continuously, these were a justifiable and arguably essential piece of tech. But I really dislike the fact that they have a shelf life, because I do try to purchase sustainably. And that idea that there's an artificial cap seemed ridiculous to me. So got a couple of Pebblebees, and they've been decent. You do have to charge them up, but in exchange for that slight inconvenience, once every few months, you don't have to throw it in the rubbish. So less e-waste. But what I'd love to actually learn about, Herman and Corin, is the unique ways in which these things work, because you would assume that these are just, I don't know, they work on Bluetooth, they speak back to your phone, and that's how you find them if you need it. But it's a lot more sophisticated than that. They have this kind of node network that they form among themselves, and even the Google Find My Device backbone is itself running this kind of retrieval network. It's actually interesting because we've talked about networks of all different kinds, and this is kind of a mesh that flies under the radar a little bit, because it's purpose specific and different vendors have different meshes. Now, it seems very counterproductive that you'd have these different companies, Samsung, Apple, Pebblebee, whatever you have, all operating their own walled garden meshes. And I'm wondering, firstly, is that the case, or do these things actually cooperate with passing these parcels? And if you turn it on, and I think if you go into Google Find My Device, you might see by default it's on, and it says something like, turn on device discovery, and you're going to, you're helping other people find their things. And you say, yeah, I guess. I mean, why not? I'd love to help someone find their wallet or their keys, a small part in that process. But what's actually happening when you select that option? Doesn't mean that there's always this little kind of traffic going on in the background, that you're detecting the presence of somebody with a certain tag type. You're passing it on, looking for the next node on the mesh. How does that actually work while protecting the privacy of those you're connecting to? Because it seems like a very unusual thing. We don't typically see mesh networks are usually the province of, LoRa, Zigbee, Boffin type technology, but these are really widely distributed meshes that sit on a lot of people's smartphones, maybe without them knowing about it. Let's talk about how that technology actually works in today's episode.
Daniel sent us this one, and honestly, it's the kind of question that makes you realize how much invisible infrastructure we carry around in our pockets. He's been using Pebblebee trackers after getting frustrated with Tile's planned obsolescence battery situation, and he wants to know what's actually happening under the hood when these Bluetooth trackers talk to a network of strangers' phones. Specifically, are these different company meshes walled gardens, or do they cooperate? And when you toggle on that help find other people's devices setting, what kind of background traffic are you really agreeing to?
This is genuinely one of the most elegant bits of crowdsourced infrastructure ever deployed, and most people have no idea it's running on their phone right now.
Which is probably by design. If people understood it, they'd either be fascinated or creeped out.
Both is fair. But before we get into the mesh architecture, I should mention, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today, so if anything comes out particularly coherent, credit goes to the silicon down the road.
All right, walk me through this. Daniel's got a Pebble Bee clipped to his wallet. He loses the wallet at a cafe. What actually happens next?
The Pebble Bee, like a tile or an AirTag, is fundamentally a Bluetooth low-energy beacon. It's broadcasting a tiny rotating identifier. Think of it as a pseudonymous chirp, every couple of seconds. By itself, that chirp is useless unless Daniel's phone is within about 30 to 100 meters and listening. But the magic is that it's not just his phone listening. Every Android phone that has Find My Device network participation enabled, and every iPhone that's opted into the Find My network, is also listening for these chirps.
My phone is out there playing detective for strangers.
And here's where the cryptography gets clever. When Daniel's phone initially pairs with his Pebble Bee, it generates a cryptographic key pair. The tracker broadcasts a public key that rotates frequently. Apple rotates every 15 minutes. Google's implementation uses a similar rotation scheme. So you can't just track the tracker's identity over time. But any participating phone that hears that chirp will encrypt its own location using the public key it just heard, and upload that encrypted location blob to the cloud.
Wait, so the passing phone knows where it is, but has no idea whose tracker it just heard, or what the tracker is attached to?
The uploading phone cannot decrypt the location data it just helped relay. It's essentially mailing a locked box to Apple or Google servers with a return address it can't read. Only Daniel's phone, which holds the private key, can decrypt that location when he opens the Find My app and asks, "Where's my wallet?"
That's actually quite beautiful. The courier doesn't know what they're carrying or for whom.
It's a blind courier network, and the scale is staggering. Apple's Find My network encompasses well over a billion active devices. Google's Find My Device network, which launched its crowdsourced tracking in April of 2024, leverages essentially every Android device running Google Play services, north of 3 billion devices globally.
3 billion devices, all passively sniffing for lost wallets. That's either the most wholesome use of a panopticon, or the most panopticon-like use of wholesomeness.
I'd lean toward wholesome, but with asterisks. The privacy design is strong. Apple published a detailed security white paper on this back in 2019, and the cryptography community largely gave it a nod. The rotating public keys mean you can't correlate a tracker's identity across time windows unless you possess the private key. Even Apple and Google can't decrypt the locations they're storing.
What you're telling me is that if I walk past someone's lost keys, my phone silently does a good deed without me knowing, and without the key's owner knowing it was me, and without the company in the middle being able to read the postcard.
And the bandwidth cost is negligible. These are tiny payloads. We're talking bytes, not kilobytes. The location metadata gets bundled with other telemetry. Your phone is already sending, so there's effectively no additional battery drain from the relay function.
Okay, but Daniel asked about the walled garden problem. His Pebble Bee is on the Google Find My Device network. If he drops his wallet next to someone who only has an iPhone with Apple's Find My network enabled, does that iPhone ignore his Pebble Bee?
This is where it gets frustrating, and Daniel's instinct is right. As of now, these are largely separate networks. Apple's Find My network listens for AirTags and third-party devices certified through Apple's Find My certification program. Google's Find My Device network listens for trackers that implement the Google specification, Pebble Bee being one of them, along with Chipolo and a few others. Samsung has its own SmartThings Find network for Galaxy devices and Samsung-branded trackers.
Three separate blind courier services, all doing essentially the same thing, not talking to each other.
The practical consequence is real. If you're in a region with higher Android density, a Google network tracker benefits from more relay nodes. If you're in North America or Japan, where iPhone market share is enormous, an AirTag has a much denser detection mesh.
Your choice of tracker is partly a bet on which strangers you'll be near when you lose your stuff.
That's a surprisingly accurate way to put it. Now, there has been some movement toward interoperability. In May of 2023, Apple and Google jointly announced a proposed industry specification to address unwanted tracking across platforms. The spec, which eventually became a standard through the Internet Engineering Task Force, was designed so that both iOS and Android could detect and alert users about unknown trackers traveling with them, regardless of which brand the tracker is.
That's the anti-stalking side, though, not the finding your wallet side.
Right, and that distinction matters. The anti-stalking detection is about your phone noticing, hey, there's a Bluetooth tracker that's been moving with you for a while, and it's not registered to your account. That cross-platform detection is now widely deployed. But the actual finding functionality, the mesh relay, remains separate. A stranger's iPhone won't relay the location of a Pebble Bee. A stranger's Android won't relay the location of an AirTag.
That seems like it defeats the whole point, if the hard part, agreeing on a protocol for recognizing each other's trackers, is already solved, why not extend it to the relay?
The technical spec for the relay is actually different and more complex than the anti-stalking detection. The anti-stalking piece just needs to recognize this is a tracker and check proximity over time. The relay piece requires agreeing on encryption formats, key rotation schedules, upload APIs, server infrastructure. And candidly, there's also a competitive moat dynamic. Apple's Find My Network is a significant ecosystem lock-in. Google wants to build the same for Android.
It's not that they can't cooperate. It's that the cooperation doesn't serve their strategic interests.
Though I'd argue that as these networks mature, the pressure to interoperate will increase. Regulators in the EU have already been asking pointed questions about digital ecosystem interoperability. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a mandate in the next few years.
Let me pull on a thread Daniel mentioned. He said he went with Pebble Bee specifically because tiles have a shelf life. The battery dies and you throw the whole thing away. What's the actual landscape of tracker sustainability?
Tile's original trackers use non-replaceable batteries with a claimed lifespan of about 1 to 3 years. After that, you were supposed to recycle them and buy new ones. They've since introduced models with replaceable batteries. The Tile Pro and Tile Mate from 2022 onward use standard CR2032 coin cells you can swap yourself. But the criticism stuck, and companies like Pebble Bee and Chipolo leaned hard into the rechargeable angle. Pebble Bee's trackers charge via USB-C, and you top them up every few months.
Daniel mentioned he's fine with that trade-off. A slight charging inconvenience versus contributing to e-waste.
He's not alone. The e-waste argument has real teeth. There are estimates that Tile alone shipped over 40 million trackers by 2021. Even if only a fraction of those were the disposable models, that's millions of devices with lithium coin cells heading to landfills. The rechargeable models eliminate that entirely.
All right, I want to go deeper on the mesh architecture. You said these are Bluetooth low-energy chirps being picked up by passing phones. How does that actually work at the radio level? Is my phone constantly scanning?
It's not constantly scanning in a way that would drain your battery, because Bluetooth Low Energy is designed for exactly this use case. Your phone's Bluetooth controller has a scanning duty cycle. It wakes up periodically, listens for a very short window, we're talking milliseconds, and checks for any BLE advertisements. If it catches one that matches the Find My Network pattern, it processes it. The advertisement packet from the tracker is tiny, typically 31 bytes or less. It contains the rotating public key and some flags.
31 bytes. That's smaller than this sentence.
Smaller than most sentences, yes. And the relay phone doesn't need to establish a connection. It just hears the advertisement, bundles its own GPS, or Wi-Fi-derived location, encrypts it with the public key from the advertisement, and uploads the whole thing. There's no handshake, no pairing, no sustained connection.
It's less of a mesh network in the traditional sense, where nodes relay to other nodes, and more of a distributed sensor grid that reports to a central server.
That's an important distinction. Traditional mesh networks like Zigbee or LoRaWAN route data through intermediate nodes toward a destination. This is a star of stars topology. Each relay phone reports directly to the cloud. The cloud aggregates the encrypted location reports, and the owner's device queries the cloud. There's no device-to-device forwarding.
Which means you need internet connectivity on the relay phone. If someone's phone is offline, they can't participate.
But given how ubiquitous cellular and Wi-Fi connectivity is in most places where people lose things, that's rarely a bottleneck.
What about the tracker itself? Does it know it's been found? Does it do anything differently when it senses a relay phone nearby?
The tracker is mostly dumb. It's just broadcasting on a schedule. Some trackers have a speaker so the owner can make it ring when they're within direct Bluetooth range. That's a separate direct connection. But for the crowdsourced finding, the tracker has no idea it's been detected. It just keeps chirping, and the owner discovers its location when they check the app.
That's oddly poetic. The lost object has no idea it's been found until its owner comes to collect it.
You're getting philosophical about a key fob.
I contain multitudes. All right, let's talk about the privacy attack surface. You said the cryptography is solid. What actually breaks if someone tries to abuse this?
The primary concern that security researchers have raised is unwanted tracking. Someone slipping a tracker into your bag or car to follow your movements. Both Apple and Google have built detection mechanisms. If an unknown tracker is observed moving with you over time, your phone will alert you. Apple's implementation also makes the AirTag emit a sound if it's been separated from its owner for a period, originally 3 days, later reduced to somewhere between 8 and 24 hours after separation.
That's cross-platform now, you said?
Since the joint specification was implemented, yes. An Android phone will detect an unknown AirTag traveling with it, and an iPhone will detect an unknown Pebblebee or Chipolo. The detection is based on the tracker's Bluetooth advertisement pattern. The spec defines a common format that all compliant trackers use to identify themselves as trackers, separate from the encrypted location payload.
What about a more sophisticated attack? Could someone set up a network of listening devices to triangulate trackers and build a map of where people's valuables are?
In theory, yes, but the encryption makes it pointless. You'd collect a bunch of encrypted location blobs keyed to public keys you don't have the private keys for. You'd know some tracker was at this location at this time, but you wouldn't know whose tracker, what it's attached to, or where it went next, because the public key rotates and you can't correlate across rotations.
Unless you're the cloud provider.
Unless you're Apple or Google, who hold the encrypted blobs and could theoretically correlate upload patterns, IP addresses, and timestamps even without being able to decrypt the payloads. Both companies say they don't do this, and their privacy policies are fairly explicit. But this is where trust in the platform holder becomes the weakest link.
Yet most people have already handed over far more granular location data to both companies through maps, search history, and a dozen other services. The Find My Network is arguably one of the less invasive things your phone is doing.
That's a fair point, if a slightly depressing one. The Find My Network's privacy model is actually stronger than many other location-based services precisely because of the end-to-end encryption. When you use Google Maps, Google knows exactly where you are. When your phone relays a stranger's tracker location, Google receives an encrypted blob it can't read, associated with your location.
Google knows where my phone was when it helped a stranger, but not what it helped with.
And that metadata, device X was at location Y, at time Z, is something Google already has through other services. The Find My Network doesn't meaningfully expand their knowledge of your movements.
Let me circle back to Daniel's question about whether these networks actually cooperate. You said no for the relay, but is there any technical reason they couldn't? If Apple and Google both use rotating public keys and encrypted location uploads, couldn't they just agree to accept each other's uploads?
Technically, it's entirely feasible. You'd need a shared API specification, agreement on encryption standards, and probably a federated or shared cloud infrastructure for the encrypted blobs. The Internet Engineering Task Force draft that came out of the Apple-Google collaboration actually laid groundwork for this. The challenge isn't technical, it's business and trust. Would Apple trust Google's servers with Find My Network data? Would Google trust Apple's? Would they build a neutral third-party relay?
Who pays for the server infrastructure that processes billions of location pings per day?
Right now, each company absorbs that cost as part of their ecosystem. The cost is non-trivial but manageable at their scale. A federated system would require some kind of cost-sharing agreement, and that's a negotiation nobody seems eager to have.
Daniel's Pebblebee is locked into the Android ecosystem's mesh, and that's unlikely to change soon.
In the near term, yes. The good news is that the Android mesh is enormous and growing. Google's Find My Device network launched with a specific design choice that's worth mentioning. By default, it opted for aggregation by default in high-traffic areas. In busy locations, airports, train stations, shopping centers, the network waits for multiple relay reports before showing a location to the owner. This is a privacy feature designed to prevent a single malicious relay from pinpointing a tracker's location.
If I lose my wallet in a cafe, it might take a few minutes before enough phones have passed by to confirm the location.
The trade-off is between precision and privacy. In a dense urban area, you might get a location within a few meters after a dozen relay reports. In a sparse rural area, a single report might be all you get, and the system will show it to you immediately.
That's a clever calibration. What about the tracker density itself? If I have a Pebble Bee and someone else has a Chipolo, and we're both in the same room, do our phones help each other's trackers?
Yes, because both Pebble Bee and Chipolo trackers that are on the Google Find My Device network use the same protocol. Your Android phone doesn't distinguish between brands. It just sees a compliant tracker advertisement and relays it. The brand fragmentation only matters at the network level. Apple versus Google versus Samsung.
Within the Google network, there's actual cooperation. It's only across the big three where the walls go up.
And that's partly because Google's network specification is open to third-party manufacturers. Pebble Bee, Chipolo, and others build to Google's spec and get access to the same mesh. Apple has a similar, made-for-iPhone program for Find My Network accessories. Samsung's SmartThings Find is more restricted. It primarily works with Samsung Galaxy devices and Samsung's own Galaxy SmartTag trackers.
Daniel mentioned something interesting in passing. He said these mesh networks fly under the radar because they're purpose-specific. I think that's exactly right. Most people think of mesh networks as either emergency communication tools or smart home sensor grids, but this is arguably the largest deployed mesh architecture in the world, and it's entirely invisible.
It's invisible by design, and that's what makes it fascinating from an infrastructure perspective. The Find My networks are a kind of ambient infrastructure. They work because they're built into something people already carry for entirely different reasons. Nobody buys a phone to be a relay node for lost wallets. The relay function is a tiny parasitic load on an existing device ecosystem.
Parasitic in a good way. A remora, not a tapeworm.
A mutualist remora, yes. The phone owner gets the benefit of the network when they lose their own stuff in exchange for contributing negligible battery and bandwidth to help others.
Let's talk about what happens at the radio level in a bit more detail. You said Bluetooth low energy advertisements. How does the phone even know to listen for these specific advertisements versus the thousands of other BLE devices in a busy area?
The advertisement packet includes a service UUID or a specific data pattern that identifies it as a Find My Network tracker. The phone's Bluetooth stack has a filter. It's not waking up the main processor for every BLE advertisement it sees. The Bluetooth controller itself can do pattern matching at a very low power level. When it sees an advertisement that matches the Find My Network pattern, it wakes the main processor briefly to handle the encryption and upload.
The filtering happens in hardware, essentially.
In firmware on the Bluetooth controller, which is about as close to hardware as you can get without being silicon, this is why the battery impact is negligible. The main processor, the power-hungry component, stays asleep for the vast majority of advertisements.
What's the range on these things? If I drop my wallet in a park, how close does someone need to walk for their phone to catch the chirp?
In ideal conditions. Open air, no interference. Bluetooth low energy can reach about 100 meters. In practice, with walls, bodies, and radio noise, you're looking at more like 30 to 50 meters for reliable detection. In a dense urban environment, that's plenty. You've got dozens or hundreds of phones passing through that radius every few minutes.
The effective coverage is less about the radio range and more about foot traffic density.
And this creates an interesting coverage map. The Find My networks work brilliantly in cities, airports, malls, and transit hubs. They work less well in rural areas, hiking trails, or anywhere with low population density. If you lose your keys in the middle of a national forest, the network won't help you. You're back to direct Bluetooth range from your own phone.
Which is where something like a satellite-based tracker would theoretically fill the gap. But that's a different product category entirely.
Different cost bracket, too. Satellite trackers are hundreds of dollars plus subscription fees. A Pebble Bee or Tile is $30, no subscription.
All right. I want to probe the security model a bit more. You said the public keys rotate. How often? And what prevents an attacker from just collecting all the rotating keys and correlating them by signal strength or location?
The rotation period varies by implementation. Apple's AirTag rotates its public key every 15 minutes. Google's specification uses a similar window. The rotation is derived from a master key that only the owner's device holds, using a deterministic algorithm. So the owner's phone can calculate what public key the tracker should be broadcasting at any given time, but an observer can't link the 15-minute windows together.
If I'm a stalker and I plant an AirTag on someone's car, I can see all the location reports in my Find My app. The rotation doesn't help the victim. It helps prevent third-party tracking of the tracker itself.
The rotation protects the tracker owner's privacy from the relay network. It doesn't protect the victim of unwanted tracking. That's what the unwanted tracking alerts are for. And those alerts have gotten more sophisticated. Both Apple and Google now use machine learning on the device to distinguish between a tracker that happens to be near you on a bus and a tracker that is consistently moving with you across multiple locations over time.
What about law enforcement access? If the police want to find a tracker, can they compel Apple or Google to hand over location data?
This is where the encryption model really matters. Apple and Google hold encrypted blobs they cannot decrypt. They don't have the private keys. So a warrant served on Apple or Google for tracker location data would yield a pile of ciphertext. To actually get the location, law enforcement would need the owner's device, which holds the private key.
The system is effectively warrant-proof for the location data itself, though the platform holders could still provide metadata, which accounts uploaded encrypted blobs from which IP addresses at which times.
The metadata side is still accessible through legal process, but the actual location of the tracker is cryptographically protected.
That's a stronger privacy guarantee than most people's text messages.
In some ways, yes. Though it's worth noting that this strong encryption is partly a business necessity. If Apple or Google could read the locations of all trackers on their networks, the liability and public perception risk would be enormous. The encryption protects them as much as it protects users.
It's a rare case where the incentives align perfectly. Privacy as a business shield.
The Find My networks have been remarkably free of major privacy scandals, especially compared to other location-based services. The unwanted tracking issue got a lot of press attention early on, but the cross-platform detection has largely addressed it.
Let me ask a practical question. Daniel's got his Pebble Bee. He's opted into the Find My Device network. His phone is out there relaying for strangers. What's the actual data usage look like? Is this chewing through his mobile data plan?
Each relay upload is on the order of a few hundred bytes. Even if your phone relays dozens of trackers per day, you're talking kilobytes, not megabytes. Over a month, it might add up to a few megabytes at most. Your phone probably uses more data checking for software updates in the background.
To help others find their devices, Toggle is truly a free good. No meaningful cost to you. Significant benefit to the collective.
It's one of the purest examples of digital mutual aid I can think of, and the adoption rate reflects that. Google reported that within months of launching the crowdsourced Find My Device network, hundreds of millions of Android devices had it enabled.
Most of those people probably toggled it on without reading the prompt, just tapping yes to get through the setup screen.
Which is fine, honestly. The privacy design means that uninformed consent is still safe consent in this case. You're not exposing yourself by participating.
That's a rare thing to be able to say about a tech product.
It really is.
Let's shift to the tracker hardware itself. Daniel mentioned a Pebble Bee needs charging every few months. What's the actual battery life on these rechargeable trackers compared to the disposable ones?
The Pebble Bee card, the wallet-sized one Daniel likely has, claims about 12 to 18 months of battery life per charge, depending on usage. The Tile Pro with a replaceable CR2032 battery gets about 1 year. The original disposable Tile Mate got about 2 to 3 years.
The rechargeable ones actually need attention more frequently than the disposable ones lasted in total.
Yes, but the attention is plugging it in for an hour, not buying a new product and throwing the old one away. It's a different category of inconvenience. And Pebble Bee has been iterating. Their newer models have improved battery life and faster charging.
What about the tracking range? Are there meaningful differences between brands?
The range is largely dictated by the Bluetooth low energy specification and the antenna design. Most trackers in this class have similar range, around 100 meters line of sight. The Pebble Bee card, because it's designed to be thin enough for a wallet, has a slightly smaller antenna and may have somewhat reduced range compared to a bulkier key fob. But for the crowdsourced network, this difference barely matters because relay density is what determines findability, not raw range.
The differentiator between these products isn't really the hardware. It's the network they're attached to and the sustainability story.
The software experience. The Find My app on Android versus the Tile app versus Apple's Find My. These have different user interfaces, different alert settings, different family sharing options. That's where the day-to-day experience diverges.
Daniel also mentioned that he dislikes the artificial shelf life of disposable trackers on principle. I think there's something deeper there worth pulling on. The whole category of smart home accessories with non-replaceable batteries feels like a dark pattern.
It's planned obsolescence, plain and simple, and it's particularly galling for a product whose entire purpose is to be attached to something you plan to keep for years. Your keys, your wallet, your luggage, these are durable goods. Attaching a disposable electronic to a durable good is conceptually dissonant.
The industry has felt the pushback. Tile added replaceable batteries. Bumblebee and Chipolo went rechargeable. Even Apple, with the AirTag, used a standard replaceable CR2032 battery. The market spoke.
Though Apple's choice was partly driven by form factor, the AirTag is too small for a charging port. But yes, the replaceable battery was a good call. Anecdotally, AirTag battery replacement is about once a year, and the battery costs a dollar.
The industry standard is shifting towards sustainability, even if slowly.
The EU's right to repair and sustainability regulations are accelerating this. There are proposals to require replaceable batteries in all consumer electronics sold in the EU by 2027. That would effectively ban the disposable tracker model entirely.
That's a genuine bright spot in tech regulation.
Now, let me talk about something Daniel alluded to that we haven't fully unpacked. He said these meshes don't typically cooperate, and he wondered whether that's counterproductive. I think there's an interesting counterargument that the fragmentation actually serves a privacy purpose. If there were a single universal mesh for all trackers globally, it would be a single point of failure and a single point of surveillance. The fact that there are three competing networks means no single entity controls all tracker location data. It's a form of structural privacy through fragmentation.
That's an interesting take, though I'm not sure it's intentional. It feels more like emergent privacy, a side effect of competition rather than a designed feature.
But the effect is real regardless of intent. If you're privacy sensitive, you might even choose your tracker based on which company's infrastructure you distrust less.
Which raises a question. Is there any functional difference in the privacy implementations between Apple and Google's networks?
The broad strokes are very similar. Rotating public keys, end-to-end encryption, relay anonymity. But there are differences in the defaults. Apple's Find My network is on by default on iOS devices. Google's crowdsourced Find My device network, when it launched, gave users a choice during setup. Apple's network also has the aggregation by default in high-traffic areas, feature I mentioned earlier. Google's implementation has a similar concept, but with slightly different thresholds.
Samsung SmartThings Find?
Samsung's network is the most restricted. It only works with Samsung devices, and the relay density is lower as a result. But Samsung has a feature the others don't, ultra-wideband precision finding on their higher-end trackers and phones. UWB gives you centimeter-level direction and distance when you're within close range, using Bluetooth for rough location and UWB for the final few meters.
With a Samsung tracker and a recent Galaxy phone, you can play a game of hot or cold with directional arrows.
Apple has the same feature with AirTags and iPhones that have the U1 chip. Google's network supports UWB on devices that have it, but the tracker ecosystem on the Android side has been slower to adopt UWB.
That seems like the next frontier. Bluetooth gets you to the right building. UWB gets you to the right couch cushion.
There's work being done on combining these with other signals. Some trackers use Wi-Fi fingerprinting or even audio chirps above human hearing range for the final few feet. The Pebblebee card doesn't have UWB, but it does have a fairly loud speaker for ringing.
Daniel mentioned he's been happy with the Pebblebee overall. Any known issues with that specific tracker?
The main complaints I've seen in reviews are about the charging connector. Early models used a proprietary magnetic charger that was easy to lose. Newer models have moved to USB-C, which solves that. There have also been some reports of firmware update issues, but those seem to have been resolved in the past year or so. The core functionality, being findable through the Google network, works reliably.
The Google Find My Device network itself? Any notable outages or reliability problems?
The network has been fairly stable since its broader rollout. There were some initial concerns about the aggregation by default, feature making trackers slow to locate in low traffic areas. Google adjusted the thresholds over time. Now, in my experience, a tracker in a moderately busy area will get a location update within 5 to 15 minutes.
That's fast enough to matter. If you realize you left your wallet at a restaurant and you're already in the car, you can check and see it's still there before you drive back.
That's exactly the use case. It's not real-time tracking, and it shouldn't be for privacy reasons, but it's fast enough for practical recovery.
Let's talk about one more angle Daniel raised. He said these mesh networks are unusual because we usually associate mesh networks with things like LoRa or Zigbee, specialized, purpose-built networks for industrial or hobbyist use. But this is a mesh built on top of a general-purpose device that everyone already carries. Is there a broader lesson here about how infrastructure should be built?
I think there is. The Find My networks are an example of what some researchers call infrastructure parasitism, in the positive sense, building new capabilities on top of existing, widely deployed hardware rather than requiring dedicated infrastructure. It's the same principle behind using Wi-Fi access points for indoor positioning, or using cell tower handoff data for traffic analysis.
The future of infrastructure is less about building new physical networks and more about extracting new capabilities from the devices already in people's hands.
It's certainly more efficient, and it's more resilient in some ways. If you lose your keys in a city, you're not dependent on a single network of dedicated sensors. You're dependent on the fact that hundreds of people will walk past your keys with devices that happen to have Bluetooth radios.
The flip side is that it's fragile in ways people don't think about. If a natural disaster knocks out cell service, the relay network goes down too. If there's a widespread Bluetooth vulnerability, every relay node is potentially affected.
These are real concerns, though they're edge cases for the typical use scenario. The bigger fragility, in my view, is the platform dependency. If Google or Apple decided to deprecate their Find My networks, say for cost reasons or strategic shifts, millions of trackers would become useless overnight.
That's the trade-off with any cloud-dependent hardware. Your Pebble Bee isn't really yours in the full sense. It's yours as long as Google continues to run the servers that make it useful.
That's a broader conversation about the Internet of Things and device longevity. But for now, at $30 a tracker with no subscription, the value proposition is hard to argue with.
Especially for someone like Daniel, who by his own admission loses things around the house continuously.
There's a genuine quality of life improvement here. The average person spends something like 10 minutes a day looking for misplaced items. Over a year, that's about 60 hours, a full work week and a half. A $30 tracker that cuts that in half has an extraordinary return on investment.
The psychological benefit of not starting your day with the panic of where are my keys is probably worth more than the time savings.
The cognitive load reduction is real.
All right. I think we've covered the architecture, the privacy model, the walled garden problem, and the sustainability angle. Any closing thoughts on where this technology goes from here?
I think we'll see two developments in the next few years. First, regulatory pressure for cross-network interoperability will increase, especially in Europe. Second, ultra-wideband will become standard across mid-range and budget phones, making precision finding ubiquitous. Combine those two, and you'll have a future where any lost item with a tracker can be precisely located by any nearby phone, regardless of brand.
A universal findability layer. That's a nice vision.
Technically achievable with today's cryptography. It just requires the platform holders to agree that lost wallets are more important than ecosystem lock-in.
We can dream. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1500s, Portuguese traders introduced the abacus to communities along the Namib Desert coast, where local merchants adapted it using ostrich eggshell beads instead of wooden counters. And the word they coined for the device, ocurisa, is derived from the Herero verb meaning to count by touch.
Ostrich eggshell beads. That's actually kind of beautiful.
I'm now imagining an abacus that doubles as a percussion instrument.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. It helps more people find the show. You can find every episode at My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Until next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.